LegalizeFreedom.com. Why are we here? Where do we come from? Where are we going? From the nature of reality to the future of humanity. Beyond politics, poverty, and war. LegalizeFreedom.com.
Greetings and welcome once again to LegalizeFreedom.com. I'm your host Greg Moffat, and my guest today is Courtney Brown of the Farsight Institute, who joins us to discuss his latest documentary, The Great Pyramid of Giza, The Mystery Solved, which is a definitive breakthrough study of how one of the most amazing mysteries on Earth was constructed. The Great Pyramid is huge, and it was built with gigantic stone blocks that even today seem nearly impossible to cut, transport, and assemble on the massive scale required when it was originally constructed. Until now, no one on Earth really knew how these vast structures were assembled, at a time when tools were rudimentary, camels and wooden or reed boats were the primary forms of transportation, and manual labour was the only apparent means available to construct anything. This revolutionary scientific study employs the use of remote viewing on an unprecedented scale to solve the mystery of the Great Pyramid. Remote viewing is a mental procedure that was originally developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes. Now, civilians employ the same methods or procedures that are derivative of those methods to study human history. The Great Pyramid Project was undertaken at the Farsight Institute using data collected by two of the most accomplished military-grade remote viewers operating today. As a result, the true story of how the Great Pyramid was actually constructed using a combination of exotic advanced technology and brutal manual labour can finally be told. Beyond building methods, however, there are even bigger questions. Who designed the Great Pyramid, and what was its true purpose? Was there extraterrestrial involvement? And if some ancient civilizations were far more advanced than mainstream archaeology assumes, what are the implications for our ideas of progress and plans for humanity's future? Very little of what most people learned in school about the origins of the Great Pyramid of Giza is correct. Our civilization needs to uncover its true history without bias and with an open mind. Now is not the time to censor new knowledge. Now is the time to face our past. Hello and welcome, Courtney, and thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, Greg, I actually want to thank you very much for inviting me. This is the second time on your show, and I really appreciate being invited back.
Third time even.
Third time on the show. That's right. That's right. We did it on an early one, then we did one for the Atlantis, and now also for the new Great Pyramid of Giza.
Yeah, exactly. And the full title of your new documentary is The Great Pyramid of Giza, The Mystery Solved. That's just been released, and that's what we're about today. Before we get into that, I think we should, for the benefit of listeners who are new to this, we should bring them up to speed on with a quick crash course on remote viewing.
Sure.
Perhaps you can tell them a little bit about your background as well and how you came to be doing this work in the first place.
Actually, that's an interesting story. I can actually mention something that I've not mentioned before. I am, of course, Courtney Brown, and I'm the director of the Farsight Institute. That's spelled like seeing far, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T. And that's the website also, farsight.org, O-R-G, because we're a nonprofit. And we are the only, not just the best, but the only public venue where you can get these full-blown scientific projects involving the study of the remote viewing phenomenon. And remote viewing is a mental procedure that is used to transfer information, perceptual information, across both time and space in complete violation of the laws of the currently accepted laws of physics, both quantum as well as relativistic. And the really interesting, actually it's not totally in It's not really actually in violation with the quantum laws, but the quantum laws have been sort of bridged with a lot of the relativistic stuff, so they have quantum relativistic equations and thoughts, but it's in violation of all that. And what it is that we study the remote viewing phenomenon as it is done using procedures that were developed by the United States military and used for espionage purposes. Now, the official program in the U.S. military was closed down in November 1995 and released to the public, the background and so on. But everyone that I know and trust fully agrees that the military started it up right after again in a new project that's fully black, off the records, and is alive and well and doing even bigger stuff today. So the military has always had a very strong interest in remote viewing, even if they didn't know how it worked. But we are the very largest, best, and most interesting venue for these full-blown scientific projects. We're civilian, and we use the procedures that were developed by the U.S. military and used for espionage purposes, but we use them for scientific experiments, scientific exploration, and we have all of our data up for people to see, and we've actually made some advances that go well beyond things in a completely different direction than what the military did, especially the military did as it did up to November of 1995. So we're really, really out there on the cutting edge of things. And the website is where we give all this information away. And it's a huge treasure of, it's a huge website, and it's a huge treasure of information that you can find out nowhere else, find nowhere else. And so we have a lot of projects that we've done. Some of them are basic scientific projects using remote viewing to explore the nature of time and physical reality, because we are transferring perceptual information across time from the past to the present, from the future to the present, and in totally verifiable manners, depending on how our experimental design is actually set up. And then we also do operational targets that are projects where we actually use remote viewing to find out things such as ancient technologically advanced civilizations on Earth, or in this case, who and how the Great Pyramid of Giza, the pyramids out there in Egypt, how they were actually built. Because mainstream science has a story about how they think they were built. And if you listen carefully to their ideas, it is absolutely certifiably crazy. And so we really would like to find out how, in fact, they really were built. And we did a project on that, and that was just released recently, and it's fascinating. Everything that you thought you knew in school about those pyramids really needs to be thrown in the trash, because what we now know fits the facts on the grounds perfectly, and what mainstream science says simply does not fit the facts on the ground. Well, but that's basically a thumbnail of what we do: perceptual information, pictures, images, transferred clearly across time and space. By the way, the very best remote viewers on the planet work with us, and the two very best that exist right now are probably Daz Smith and Dick Allgaier, and they are extraordinary. It's like, if you compare it to a music analogy, lots of people study the piano, how to play the piano, and when you watch them play, they're focusing on the notes and the paper and the music sheets and trying to play the notes in the right way. But then you go to hear Lang Lang play the piano in Carnegie Hall, and he's closing his eyes, he's like in a trance, and the music is just filling the entire auditorium, and you say, oh gosh, so that's what it's all about. Well, that's the way Dick Allgaier and Daz Smith are like with remote viewing. They're at that level. And the release of this project, I must admit, is very important, because this is the first time we were able to upgrade the remote viewing phenomenon very significantly, so that people don't have to have any background in the arcane procedures that are used. In the past, it was always done with pen and paper, and you had to actually sort of know something about the remote viewing process in order to follow it along, because you're interpreting doodles and things like that with regard to things that they're supposed to be perceived. But now the remote viewers work standing up, working on whiteboards, being video recorded, and this is crucial, they do it in a theatrically interesting manner. So you don't need to know anything about the background of remote viewing. All you need to do is to look at it and watch them describe the Great Pyramid of Giza and how it was constructed. The way they're describing it is as good as if they were there and they're in the past watching it with their own physical eyes. It's literally no worse than that. And to be able to say that they're doing that under totally blind conditions, using just a perceptual information across time, having been told nothing about the target whatsoever. They had no idea that the pyramid was a project. And just to be able to do that, that is astounding. It's literally jaw-dropping. And so the reason that this project is so important is we've finally gotten to the point where people can look at the project and say, oh, so now I understand what remote viewing is all about. Look at what they're doing. They're drawing these things. They're describing these things in an entertaining way, and it's totally exactly what they're supposed to be describing, and they had no prior knowledge of it. And I'm watching it being done right now, standing up, the person's facing the camera in an animated way, describing the pyramid, the desert environment, how it was being used. So this is very, very convincing to that the remote viewing phenomenon actually is real.
Now, if people are intrigued and want to know more about this basic process, I mean, as we mentioned earlier, I did a show with you where you go into this in great detail. There'll be links up to that with this interview. You've written what I consider to be the definitive book on the subject. There's links to that in the store page. So all the information is there for people if they want to get more background. But turning to this project, a lot of people will be aware that the story of the Great Pyramid, and indeed a lot of archaeological sites around the world, but particularly that one, it's been very contentious, and there's been a lot of competing theories. But people in the mainstream believe pretty much that it's settled. All the stories of blocks being dragged along on wooden rollers and assembled, all the yada, yada, yada. We all know the conventional story. But when you actually probe into this, and there are certainly guys, alternative, archaeologists working in this area, when you start to break it down, how this was supposed to be done, everything from the cutting of the stone, mining, construction, transportation, the dating of the site, the purpose, all of it is found to be wanting when you look at it from a mainstream perspective. So what was it that made you, if it, indeed it was you personally, that chose this target?
Well, actually, I chose this target not because I was thinking that the mainstream people were wrong. I was sort of an idiot myself. And I actually thought it would be an easy project, a nice project, historical project. I thought they were going to do something like what the mainstream people were saying. I mean, they basically say that the big rocks, these are 80-ton blocks of stone, of granite, that were mined from a quarry near the Aswan area, 500 miles, 800 kilometers away from Giza, and cut and moved there. And they basically said that they were rolling those things on logs and then putting them in a boat and shipping them up the Nile. And I sort of figured something, we'd see something like that. And then when the remote viewing data started coming in, I said, boy, this is different. And then I started to rethink about exactly what mainstream science was saying. Well, first of all, these stone blocks are the size of a school bus. I mean, they're bigger than some of them are bigger than the trolley buses that you have in London. So these are huge stone blocks. And to think that they were just rolling these, and they're 80 tons, they were rolling them around on logs. How would they get them on the logs in the first place? And then to think that they were cutting them and moving them and putting them in a reed boat or a wooden boat on the Nile, I mean, that is so ludicrous. You put an 80-ton block on one of those boats, it'd sink in a second. I mean, it'd be like a giant just squashing it. It wouldn't float. And then they were saying that they were cutting them. This is the craziest thing. The mainstream says that they were cutting the blocks by using their crude hammers and chisels to make a crack in the rock. And then they were putting some wood chips in the crack and then spraying water on the wood chips. And the wood chips would swell up and crack the rock out of the, crack the block out of the rock. And the more I thought about that afterwards, I said, that is so stupid. If you think you can do that, go up to any cliff face. You have cliff faces. Go up to any cliff face anywhere. Find a crack and put some wood chips in there and put your canteen on it. Spread some water on it. tell me if the mountain will crack open. I mean, it is just so stupid. And then what you have to do is, this is not shoddy construction. These stone blocks, which are huge, are perfectly manufactured. They're perfectly cut. There's no error between the sides of these things. and they're huge, and you have to cut all four sides, plus you have to slice it on the top, and you have to slice it on the bottom. You can't slice an 80-ton rock on the bottom using wood chips and spit. I mean, it's just so stupid, I don't know where to begin. And so the only way this thing could have been done is by using power of some type. And when Dick Allgaier, under totally blind conditions, was given the target, for example, of the mining operation, he described it exactly. High technology was used in sort of like Star Wars lightsaber type of, although it was machinery that was big, stuff that would produce a weapon, like a beam weapon, but it would produce a beam that would actually melt, vulcanize the rock on all four sides, which is how they got the sides to be so straight. And they sliced it. They literally sliced it out of the quarry walls. And that's how they made them so perfect. So nothing that mainstream says makes sense, but the idea of using energy devices to slice them, given what we see on the ground today, that makes like total sense, because that's the only way they could have gotten them to be so perfect, perfectly squared off with absolutely no variation in the sides, and to move them and cut them in the first place. And then, you know, the mainstream says that this thing, the Great Pyramid of Giza, for example, was constructed over a 20-year period. Well, if that is true, that they had to cut 12 of these great big stone blocks out of the quarry and put them on the boats, ship them up and install them, 12 of them, every hour of every 24-hour day for 20 years. You gotta be joking. There is no way they could have done even one of those stone blocks that way, let alone 12 an hour for 20 years, 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. I mean, it is just so crazy, I don't know where to begin. So when I started to get these data in, I just said, okay, let's throw mainstream completely under the bus and just forget about it and find out how these things were actually built. So the mining involved a lot of very high technology stuff. The people that were doing the mining were actually different from the people who were doing the assembly. Because when you're using these energy devices to slice the rocks, you're melting rock, you're producing volcanism, and you can't breathe that. If you go to the top of a volcano and breathe the fumes coming out of the volcano, you will die right then and there. So the toxic air quality associated with that mining operation made it absolutely impossible for normal people to participate in that. So what actually happened is that there were some extraterrestrials that were involved in manipulating the construction of the entire project. They were the ones who did this whole thing. And what they did was they genetically engineered from fetuses a special group of people, very actually stupid, very dim-witted, but nonetheless people, that were clones of each other, short clones, and they were specially designed to be able to withstand these toxic environments better than you or I or normal humans could. And they also had filtration masks and eye protection, but they could withstand those conditions only for so long, even though they were genetically engineered to be able to do that. They could only withstand it for so long before they became defective and a new crop of those guys had to be done. But they couldn't just simply use regular people, because regular people just wouldn't have done it. And then once the blocks were cut and moved out of the quarry, then they could be handled the rest of the way by normal humans, as long as the normal humans weren't involved in the mining operation. But there was a lot of high technology that was used to do all this, and the extraterrestrials were involved with that. Anyway, then the operation was constructed because another form of technology was used to move them. They weren't rolled on logs. They were levitated. They were lifted up, and they were lifted up. Dad Smith was very clear on this. He was the remote viewer that really focused on the movement of the logs themselves. They were levitated between 18 inches and 24 inches above ground, and the workers did not have to use any brute force to move those rocks. There were 6 to 10 of them on each block, and they were minimally clad, darker skin, things like that. But they basically just manipulated them. The blocks themselves were being floated, so they just had to manipulate them into place. And that's how they got so many blocks moved so quickly. They were just sliding them into place. So with regard to levitation technologies, we actually know of a number of ways for levitation to work. There's acoustic levitation. And Dasmith did say that this process that was used to move the stone blocks was in part based on sound, meaning sound was the part of it, but not all of it. He called it sound plus. But acoustic levitation, you can actually see good videos of that on YouTube. Just Google, search for acoustic levitation. You can see things being floated around, not even moved horizontally using sound waves alone. And then we also have magnetic levitation. For example, the magnetic trains in Japan go 200 miles an hour, and they don't touch anything. They're levitated above the tracks. And those trains probably are pretty comparable in size to the great stone granite blocks, and they're also very heavy. So that's yet another form of levitation that we know. And, you know, it's assumed that the extraterrestrials would have known about those plus other methods for levitation. Anyway, that's what happened. The blocks were lifted up through technology and simply manipulated into place by humans. Now, the humans did not understand the technology. They were just totally out of it. They were ignorant of how it worked or what it, but they did know that it was lifting the blocks, and their job was just to manipulate those blocks into place. So that was absolutely fascinating to see that. So even though a lot of the information in the project is totally verifiable in the sense that the Great Pyramid is there, the blocks are there, we know that those are there, and the remote viewing data have to describe those exact things, and that's done right off the scale, great. The other things, such as the extraterrestrial involvement and the high energy devices that were used to cut the stuff, the levitation, that actually, while that has to be considered speculative because we don't have physical proof of that, given the verifiable information in the project that was totally correct, it gives great credibility to the other information, the new information, and the new information is the only stuff that makes sense given what we see on the ground. Because the crazy ideas that mainstream science has been saying about how these things were cut and moved to the place, simply, well, you say it's wanting, but you're being very charitable. It's just, you know, absolutely crazy. So what our results have is a great correspondence with what we see on the ground today. What we see on the ground today could be done with what these remote viewers do. And so, you know, that means that what we're talking about is much more credible than anything that mainstream is talking about. By the way, just for your own interest, you know, Daz Smith, he's one of the remote viewers. He's literally one of the very best remote viewers on the planet Earth, bar none. He and Dick Allgaier are the best. He's in Britain, so he's British. And, you know, you guys have one of the best on the planet right there for you, right there in your own country.
I have to say, watching the documentary, I thought it was hysterical that you subtitled some of Daz's words.
Yeah, I did do that because there was two reasons. Dick Allgaier was a celebrity newscaster in Hawaii for 30 years. So he was very used to working in front of a camera. And so he was like facing the camera more, and he was speaking like directly into the mic and sort of a loud voice that really was clear, because he was trained in how to do that for 30 years. And the video recording was new for Daz, and so he was speaking a little softer, and he also had a British accent, and we wanted to make sure that everyone in the United States would understand every word. So I sent the whole video to Dick Allgaier to listen and say, do you have any problem understanding everything Daz is saying? And Dick had no problem whatsoever. He could understand everything. But I was concerned that I wanted people to understand every word. I didn't want anything to be missed. So I was concerned that there could be some people, some places that might lose a word or two because of the accent. And so I put subtitles under everything that Daz says just so that the message would hit home, how incredibly accurate he was saying things. I didn't want anything to be missed. But yeah, he had a little less experience in front of the camera, actually a lot less experience in front of the camera. 30 years as a celebrity newscaster is hard to beat. And there was the accent issue, and I just wanted to make sure nobody missed a word of that. So,
you know, and if anybody's wondering, Daz has got a West Country accent, as we would call it here in Britain. But I just want to, I think probably everybody listening will want to backtrack just a little bit here in what you were saying.
Sure.
ETs, you know, extraterrestrials here. Yeah. This is like, whoa. Now, there's been some speculation about, you know, alien intervention on Earth in, you know, high antiquity. I mean, you've got the entire, I don't know how many seasons of Ancient Aliens they've done now in the, you know, US television.
Yeah.
But so this is a popular sort of theory, and there's been a lot written about this. But what else do we know? What other detail were you able to draw out about, you know, this extraterrestrial presence?
I work with a lot of military people. I have over the years for almost 20 years now. And behind closed doors, they talk about the extraterrestrials all the time. I'm talking two-star generals on down. I mean, so the issue is that there is a very strong desire not to talk about those things publicly. And secrecy is what the authorities do, and they don't like to let information like that. And something like that could really unsettle the apple cart. So if you look at how authorities handle things they want to keep secret, look at Area 51. Area 51 has been known for a very long time. They even have tour buses that go past Area 51. People fly near it. They hang out in the mountains near it. I mean, it's been countless television shows, both out of Hollywood, like Independence Day with Will Smith, to every possible imaginable show you can see. Area 51 is all over there. It was only 3 weeks ago that President Obama became the first president of the United States to even acknowledge publicly that Area 51 existed, meaning they wouldn't even mention the word. So authorities keep secrets, and they never disclose things. The only reason they actually acknowledge things is when it becomes so stupid and so silly that people are laughing at them. And at that point, they'll say, okay, so it works. So the extraterrestrial issue is way beyond Area 51 in terms of importance. And they're not going to come out and say, hey, the extraterrestrials are real. You're risking a huge loss of public confidence, because then people would say, you've been lying to us for so many decades. And I mean, it's a huge turnover of sort of public faith. They're not actually going to do that easily. And so what we have with the UFO stuff is the desire and the need for people to face the disclosure issue without having to rely on the authorities, because the authorities literally don't do disclosure. So that was why this documentary, The Great Pyramid of Giza, was so important, because we were getting this information using remote viewing, and we had to be able to show people that the remote viewing phenomenon was real without having the authorities come in and give them permission to think those thoughts. So you're not going to have the authorities tell you, hey, remote viewing is real, and then all the implications of that are going to come out. So what you will have is they'll be silent. So people have to have the ability to watch the remote viewing phenomenon and say, okay, I'm not having to need an authority anymore. I can see it with my own eyes. The authorities can say whatever they want in 50 years. I can see it right now. So that's a huge change that has never been accomplished before, that people can see the remote viewing in a theatrically interesting way, and you're on the edge of your seat watching it. The reality of it is so clear. You don't have to know anything about the arcane nature of the remote viewing process. And then when the extraterrestrial stuff comes up, it totally makes sense. It fits into absolutely everything else. And the project was done under squeaky clean scientific conditions, totally blind remote viewing in the sense that they were told nothing in advance. It's very, very, very persuasive. And so, yeah, there are extraterrestrials. They've been around this planet for a very long time. They have been involved in good and bad ways with the planet and all, and, you know, going back for as long as one can remember. And they were involved in the construction process, in the design process. The more unsettling thing is that the entire pyramid construction process seems to have been part of a large program to control the human population in a very unhealthy way. Because the pyramids themselves are useless piles of rocks. They don't have like any shelter potential. There's no reason for them to be there. The only reason they exist is as a mystery, to create a mystery. And they were built with unbelievable loss of life and pain and suffering. So really what happened is humans were manipulated into building these crazy things. And after they were built, with lots of lives being lost and lots of suffering, then a religion was created out of them, basically a light show. And Dick Allgaier describes the light show at the end when it was all constructed, a channeling energy through it. I mean, it was very, very impressive. And a religion was constructed out of it. So what basically happened is, during the period that they were being built, the human population was exhausted. They couldn't reground themselves and sort of settle in a way that would be normal for them. They were being manipulated into building these crazy things. And it was very much like a prison project, in the sense that if someone goes to prison, the guards give them a sludge hammer and say, here, go out and crack those rocks. And at the end of the day, they've cracked a lot of rocks, but they're exhausted, too exhausted to think about escape or revolt. And that's what the pyramid projects looked like. They were done for. And then you had, after that, the creation of the religion. It was brainwashing at its best. You wear them down physically, and then you convince them some type of crazy belief system involving a religion, and you've subjugated them. That's what it seems like it was all about. And then Daz Smith, at the end of the documentary, describes how a second group of extraterrestrials came after most of the pyramids had been done, but not all, and disrupted the whole thing, essentially chasing the first group of extraterrestrials off, leaving the second group to instill some new knowledge, some new awareness, some new understanding. And that resulted in the complete collapse of the old civilization. And over a period of about 10 years, everybody just dissolved away. They just left. So the second group of extraterrestrials, they had sufficient military power, but they didn't need it. They basically were able to, it looks like they were able to chase off the first group of extraterrestrials without having any type of space battles or anything. So we really don't know what happened to the first group of extraterrestrials. They could still be here today. In fact, if it would be normal, if any group was occupying a population and the whole deal was sort of scuttled, the next best thing for them would have been to move to guerrilla warfare operations, which would have meant to go into hiding. And then if the goal was to limit what the human population would do, then the next best thing would be simply to create some trouble, like a terrorist would blow up bombs every once in a while so that a government or a society could never settle down because they're always chasing these things. Well, you know, I'm just speculating at this point. I have no way of knowing that. But I look at the 20th century, for example, up to the current time period, and I look at all the wars and battles that we fight, World War I, World War II, Korean War, Vietnam War, then the first Desert Storm, and then of course, there was the second Desert Storm, or the second invasion into Somalia, Afghanistan and Iraq with 9/11. And I say, are we crazy as a species? Are we fundamentally defective? Or is there somebody messing with us? In the Great Pyramid of Giza, that first group of extraterrestrials was apparently, we don't have any images of them at all standing next to and talking with the human elite. So it looks like they were manipulating the elite behind the scenes, perhaps telepathically, whatever they were doing, they were getting them to do what they wanted. So they generated they created a slave-master relationship in the society. But they seem to have been doing it like with remote control. So they had some means of manipulating the elite. Well, if they could do that then they could do some of that now. And perhaps that's what they're doing. Maybe I'm just speculating, but I'm just wondering if that's one of the reasons we're so nutty as a species in terms of the way we fight everybody. It's as if the extraterrestrials, the first group of extraterrestrials, might have been involved in disrupting the human society even currently, because if they were chased off from doing their own first official program, then the next best thing would have been to sort of do things secretly in ways that they couldn't be stopped by sort of different extraterrestrial groups. And that might be just simply to cause trouble. For example, imagine yourself, and again, I just mentioned this, but imagine yourself trying to disturb a society that you were once running and controlling, and then you couldn't do that anymore. What would you do? You'd set off bombs, terrorist bombs. That's the whole nature of it. You'd have the society having to leap from place to place, trying to, you know, resolve the latest disaster. And if you look at our history over the last 100 plus years, it's like clockwork. We are having one battle after the next. And I'm not able to prove that, but it does make speculative sense to wonder about whether that is really us or whether we're being manipulated in some way to act in such a fundamentally dysfunctional manner. For example, look at the Holocaust with Hitler. That was crazy. I mean, that was crazy. Are humans really like that? That they can do stuff like that? Or was there some type of manipulation along the way? And if you look at the regularity of the wars and stuff, a lot of the things just are nutty. So if the extraterrestrials had that ability, as it does seem they had, back at the old Great Pyramid of Giza days, why would that same group not have that ability to mess with human leadership today, sort of behind the scenes? And so it doesn't prove it, but it's a question worth raising.
Well, I mean, it's one of the most popular conspiracy theories out there. I don't really like using that term, but I'm using it because so everyone will understand what I mean.
Yes, yes.
You know, it serves a purpose. You know, David Icke's idea of the reptilians, and of course, he's endured more than his fair share of ridicule. But it's not originally his idea, but it has persisted and it continues to persist. But whatever the case, there's no question, you know, I've been around some moderately powerful people occasionally, but I've said this many, many times on the show. Yeah. You only have to look at the leaders in the world and the sort of Henry Kissingers and people like that, and they're not like you and me. Something is different. There's no question about it.
Yeah, they're a little weird. They are different in some way. If you look at the actions that some of the leaders do, they are just crazy. And are we really that way? I mean, you look at common people. They don't typically suggest to do the things that our leaders end up doing. So you really sort of wonder, are the leaders being messed with, or are they? Do they just go through a personality transformation once they become leaders? I mean, I can't prove anything. It's just that it's a question. The remote viewing data clearly suggests that there were extraterrestrials manipulating human leadership in the past. And if another group of extraterrestrials, much more benign, came in and disrupted that, well then, what is the first group doing and where are they? And it's just a legitimate question. Are they still messing with us? Because either they're messing with us now, or we are really dysfunctional, defective as a species.
Why the extremely complex design of the Great Pyramid, for example? I'm referring to and thinking of all the chambers and shafts and this, that, and the other thing, and things that, of course, people have tried to explain, but they fundamentally remain as mysteries. I mean, if it was there to just be some sort of great cosmic Rubik's Cube or something that people would assume had more meaning than it did, why bother to put all the detail in it? Was that just simply add mystery?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking this whole process was just to add mystery. I think that there was nothing to this except mystery. I think that's all the pyramids actually were. Well, just ask, what do they do? What physically do the Great Pyramids do? They have no functional purpose. It was just to build a monument for the sake of building the monument. There's nothing you can do with those things. It's just a pile of rocks. And so if you're going to pile a rock, put a bunch of rocks in there, you have to ask, well, how much effort are you going to be putting into? The construction of that pyramid and the other pyramids was a huge effort. So you have to ask, why would someone put that much effort into something that is essentially useless? And then connecting the dots, well, then it was to mess with the people. It wasn't to do anything helpful. And also, if you look at the previous project that you interviewed me on, which was the so-called Atlantis project, which was an underwater anomaly off the coast of Morocco and Portugal, 1,000 miles west in the Atlantic Ocean, 3 miles deep. That project was very interesting because we now dated that to 70,000 years in the past, and we know that because the event that was that created that sort of submergence of that city, of that area, was occurred on the antipode of that spot, and the antipode of that spot is around near New Zealand, and that's where the society at that time, which is a scientific, technologically advanced society, built a drilling device, a drilling project to drill through the core, drill through the crust in order to get at the heat below. And they made an essentially a volcano, but a normal volcano has like cracks where some lava, some steam comes out, and it has to work its way through those cracks. But these guys did something totally different. They actually drilled huge boreholes right through the crust, and they essentially popped the balloon. And so when that happened, they had an explosion that was huge on one side, and the crust now in that area is the thinnest on the whole planet, and it also has the highest concentration of lava rock on the whole planet. And when you pop a big explosion on one side, you produce a dent on the antipode, which is the exact opposite spot. And that's where that anomaly is under the ocean, 3 miles deep, 1,000 miles west of Morocco and Portugal. And so that society, we were able to look at, and we do know that that happened 70,000 years ago. So even mainstream acknowledges that was when the big explosion happened that killed off most of the population of the planet. And the architecture that was available back then looked a lot like our current architecture. They had skyscrapers. It was like walking through New York City and Chicago, things like that. That's the type of architecture they had. They had rectangular buildings made of metal and concrete and, you know, cinder blocks, things like that. You had nothing that resembled the pyramids. So what we have is something that was sort of human civilization developing on its own 70,000 years ago, destroying itself. And then you have human civilization again, say 3 to 15,000 years ago, involved in this pyramid construction, building a completely different architecture, involved in brand new religions, extraterrestrial manipulation. And then that collapses. And then with the extraterrestrials no longer able to manipulate the entire human population, what happens? You get another civilization rising up that looks exactly like the old one of 70,000 years ago. So we have skyscrapers, our architecture is functional, you can put a lot of people in the buildings. So it looks like when humans are left to their own devices, we get buildings like we have today. So it looks like what was done during the pyramid time was totally a result of manipulation. It wasn't something that was natural for us.
Some researchers have reported, some of them I've actually interviewed here, very, very interesting sonic qualities around the Great Pyramid. And those who are sensitive to such things report that there's a significant energy there that's noticeable. I wonder what that might be down to if it was, you know, more or less a functionless.
Well, the buildings themselves, according to the remote viewing results, which were interesting because they were done under totally blind conditions, were capable of channeling what they call ley lines or energy sort of coming out of the earth. So we do know that there's a lot of magnetic energy in the Earth. That's what functions, that helps our compasses to work and so on. But it's more than just the magnetic energy. There's energy in the planet that seems to flow along lines, and the pyramids seem to be structured to be able to manipulate, channel that energy. So they're not creating the energy, but they're sort of manipulating it, so on. And it does appear that some energy can be detected even today associated with the pyramids. So that's actually not surprising, but it does appear that the ability to manipulate energy was part of the overall design to create the religion, because then at the end, we have very clear remote viewings of this, that a light show essentially was created with thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people gathered around the pyramids looking up at this huge light show that was involved with that. And that helped to solidify the religion, the religious aspect of this. So brainwashing at its best is what it looks like to me, Greg.
Well, it's interesting you mention, you sort of invoke the image there of probably thousands of people watching this light show. It's worth remembering that when the Great Pyramid, indeed other pyramids, were completed, when they were pristine, they looked somewhat different to they do now. People sort of imagine a big pile of blocks, and a lot of them are not in great shape, and some of them have been gone missing and fallen down and what have you. But other people have speculated about what it would have been like when it was brand new, and they talk about it having a coating of some sort of white material, which would have made it reflective of the sun, and possibly having a capstone made of gold or silver, or possibly a combination of the two, and it would have been quite something to behold.
And oddly and interestingly, that's exactly what Dick Algar described, under totally blind conditions. It's amazing. I mean, you have to actually see it to believe it. So people can actually see this documentary online or with the DVD, but you can also see the 40-minute announcement video for free right on our homepage at www.farsight.org, F-A-R-S-I-G-H-T, like seeing far. And there's right at the homepage on the top, there's a 40-minute announcement video, and it has 25 minutes of the actual full documentary in it, including some of the remote viewing of Dick Algar and Daz Smith. So you can actually see them, you know, doing some of this stuff. And then if you watch the full documentary, which is 1 hour and 45 minutes long, it is, well, you saw it, Greg, it is jaw-dropping to be able to see it with your own eyes and say, oh, so that's what it's all about.
So where does this leave us then, thinking, I realize this wasn't the target of your project, but I'm just thinking about the other sites, comparable sites around the world. There's been, you know, there are lots of other pyramids, some very similar, some pyramidal, but, you know, with radical differences. Have you had any thoughts of your own, or, you know, did Dick or Daz or any of your team speculate about that?
The remote viewing data that came in clearly suggested that there were pyramids elsewhere on the planet. That's what Dick Algar was describing, and that these ones were, the ones in Giza were connected with energy to the other ones. So it is making sense that we see these pyramids now all over the place, because that actually does make sense. But where it is now is we can't assign them a new project involving pyramids, at least not for quite a while, because they have to be able to do all of their sessions totally blind. And they can't do their sessions totally blind if they know that the next session will be similar. So we are sort of, this is it for pyramids for a while. And we are off to our very next project. So we have another project going on right now. And one of the good things that they like about working with Farsight Projects, because they do this totally voluntarily. Nobody's on salary here. And when we do these, we have no employees. So when we do these projects, they really have to like the way these projects turn out, the way they're structured, or they simply wouldn't do it, because these are the best of the best. And one of the things about it is, not only are the targets or the things that they're supposed to be perceiving very well defined, all Farsight projects are known for being really, really well defined. It's a garbage in, garbage out thing. If you don't have the projects and the targets defined exactly right, you just get back garbage. So they know that the projects and the targets are going to be well designed. But they also know that they're going to be projects that are unrelated to one another. So they know that one project will not be similar to the next. And so when they go into these remote viewing sessions, they really are doing it under totally blind conditions with no expectations whatsoever. They're only given an email, a non-leading email saying, okay, we're off to the next project. Please do your session. Send it to me. Scan it in and send it to me. And that's it. Then they do their sessions and they start. And so this is it. So anyway, so unfortunately, we won't be able to go beyond this. But it is, you are raising a good point. The information is so intriguing that they bring in. There is a natural desire to want to know more. But, you know, there are many other mysteries we're going to have to resolve as well before we can return to sort of yet other pyramid type things.
Well, quite. You touched upon it earlier, the genetic engineering component of all this.
Yeah.
And this will ring bells for people interested in these sorts of areas, because there is, of course, another school of research and thought that human beings were genetically manipulated at some point.
Mm-hmm.
The usual thinking or speculation certainly is it was by some kind of off-planet intelligence. Mm-hmm. And this kind of makes sense. It points us in perhaps a useful direction of research, because I've read many, many books about evolution, and some of them are pointing out how ill-adapted we are actually for life on the planet, and, you know, not anomalous kind of things about our, you know, the fact that we sweat, that we're hairless, that we walk mm-hmm. up, we walk upright in the first place, etc., etc.
Yeah,
I'm just wondering if there could be in this project of yours, if there could be some leads there for people who are doing research into human origins and why we're different and how we got the way we are.
Yeah, there actually are tremendous leads that we can be pursuing with regard to all that. It's going to take a time for us to sort of follow all that through. But one of the sort of obvious thoughts that we have is that when we look at our planet, we look at the great variety of people and groups that we have on our planet. I mean, it's a huge variety. If you think in terms of the racial differences, we have African, Caucasian, Pygmy, Aborigine, Asian, Native American. I mean, it goes on and on and on of all the different groups. And if you look at people who have been reporting back with the so-called abduction phenomena, where there's actual interactions with extraterrestrials, it's a very interesting phenomenon, because from those people, you don't get any type of sense that the extraterrestrials that are being interacted with are from very heterogeneous types of groups. It's like if they come from one star system, they're all like a certain type. Another star system, they're all like another type. They have a great deal of homogeneity based on what cultures and so on they come from. And the nations on our planet seem to be a real wild group of very great heterogeneity in terms of different groups. And then if you also look at the people, the individual people, not just the nations, but the individuals that are involved, you get a tremendous amount of heterogeneity as well. And you get an enormous number of artists, scientists, hugely creative people. And among the same population, you also get a very large population of perverts, crazy people, mean people. So it's almost as if this planet is a place of, I hate to say it, but it's almost as if it looks, at least on the surface, like a dumping ground for groups from all over the galaxy, where they get rid of both creative, artistic rabble-rousers, people, because inventors and creative people and artists, they're interested in, you know, changing the world, turning it upside down. And if you look at a society that's been around stably for, say, 1 million years, well, they've invented everything that they're going to invent. And the last thing they want is an artist or a revolutionary or inventor to come in and say, let's redo everything. So one way to get rid of those people is to sort of dump them off someplace else as troublemakers. On the other hand, there's probably people who are just plain perverts, mean, nasty criminal types, and you'd want to dump them off here too, perhaps. So if you think of this as being run as a prison planet when the pyramids were being done, maybe there's something to that analogy. Maybe, in fact, there was something like a prison sort of concept going on. It's unclear. Greg, it's just plain unclear. But it's possible.
Did you glean any information about what would have become of the genetically manipulated workers come slaves? Would that just have been basically killed off when it was no longer necessary? Or did you learn anything about that?
It looks like they were just discarded. That's what it looks like from the surface. It looks like they were just discarded. It looks like they were disposable beings. They weren't very intelligent. Those are the ones that were involved in the mining operation. That was the issue. They were involved in the mining operation only. They were not involved in the assembly, and they were not very intelligent, and they were, how best to say it? They were designed to be disposable. They were going to be doing mining, breathing toxic fumes. That was the end of them. They were not going to be doing anything. So they don't exist anymore. But the ones who were doing the assembly of the pyramids were you and I. They were normal human beings.
Well, the whole idea of the genetic manipulation, we touched upon that earlier, but it also reminds me of a theory that I've read in more than one place. But one theory in particular talked about human beings being genetically manipulated in order to be workers and slaves. And the one thing that pops into my mind is I read a theory about to mine gold.
That's something that was raised repeatedly by Zachariah Sitchin, for example.
Was it? Well, we all know how contentious his books are. And I confess to not having read any of them, just to have a general idea of what his theories were. But it's not... It's interesting that you guys came across this information, because again, this is an idea that has persisted time and time again, not just the alien interference, but the manipulation of our genetic makeup for specific purposes.
Yeah, yeah.
And you only have to think of the movie Prometheus, for example.
You know, there's another issue you're raising, Greg, which is when we have all of these movies, you sort of wonder, are we having these movies because we're sort of remembering? There's an awful lot of themes like that. There's just an awful lot of themes like that. And you have to sort of ask, are these themes because people are sort of remembering things like the Star Wars things, Prometheus? This idea of alien intervention in the human past, or the Star Wars thing, for example, is a huge battle, a galactic battle. And I've actually wondered many times if, in fact, something along those lines didn't actually happen. And what we ended up becoming, if we became a prison planet, I'm wondering if it was because of that conflict, if there was a conflict elsewhere, and some people wanted to flee that conflict, they might have come to Earth. And if some people started to come to Earth as refugees, maybe authorities from the conflict area actually followed them and said, well, let's keep them here. Let's keep them locked up. And maybe that's how the prison thing came. And if the authorities were trying to control the development and the memory of the human population, maybe it's because the humans would have remembered what happened to them in the past. Through these, through movies and things like that, they would have remembered what actually occurred, and maybe they eventually would have started asking for reparations, justice, things like that. And if you keep the population controlled, that none of that would have happened. So it's just a real question. We have these constant themes coming up of galactic sort of intrigue and extraterrestrial manipulation of the past. And by the way, this is one of the reasons that the authorities are so absolutely crucial about not letting this stuff out. This is exactly why they keep this stuff under wraps. Yeah, we have a we have a government, a series of governments all over the planet that are deathly afraid of the population finding out exactly who they are and where they came from and what the larger scope of things are. But that has to happen eventually. It can't continue forever that we do this. And so Farsight, the Farsight Institute is actually serving a very great role right now in terms of helping the planet make that transition with from a time when all that information was repressed to a time when the information sort of is more open. You know, I should also say that we're at sort of a very crucial juncture right now. The two rebestring, in the very early days, the entire remote viewing community was oriented around teaching lots of people, but it was teaching people sort of to be mediocre, basic, entry-level remote viewers, nothing that would turn a planet around. But after a while, starting in the late 1990s, we decided to stop teaching at Farsight and to start focusing on working with the people who were simply the best. And it became fewer and fewer and fewer over the years, and now we're working with essentially two people, Dick Allgaier and Daz Smith, who are we're at the very top of our game, meaning it's never, ever, in the military or outside of the military, it's never been this good. On the other hand, we're two people, and it's a bit risky right now because we have to accomplish what we're doing quickly because it took about 20 years to get to this point. And Dick Allgaier is getting older, and he also had a concussion a few years back, which forced him to retire from his job as a celebrity newscaster. And while he's recovered from the concussion, he still can't handle the level of day-to-day stress that you had in a very noisy newsroom that was really high-pressured, 10, 12-hour days, things like that. So, and he's getting older. So, you know, we're looking at a retirement situation and the near future that'll be sort of permanent. And if you look at Daz Smith, he and Dick Allgaier are the absolute best on the planet. But Daz is a graphic artist. Now, he's a great graphic artist. He's really, really good. He trained as a graphic artist. His whole life he's been a graphic artist. But the economy isn't what it used to be, and there's not that many graphic artist jobs. And he's been talking with me for months now about possibly leaving remote viewing entirely to get even a manual worker job in order to buy food, pay the bills for his family. So we're talking about the possible loss of both Dick and Daz in the near future. And now if we had to start all over again, you're talking about another 20-year period of training people, and you're talking also about being in the exact same situation 20 years from now, where you'll have a very few people to work with, but they'll be the best there is, and they're both having issues. I mean, that's what happens when you have a 20-year period. Financial issues, health issues, age issues start intervening. And so it's not going to get better if we do this all over again. This is the best it's ever been. It's the best it's ever going to get. Redo it, it'll be the same situation. So we're in a situation where we really have to move to the next level to get the remote viewing results out in sufficient quantity and quality that the planet can awaken, or it's over. And, you know, we'll have to wait for the next generation to start it all over again and wish them luck. So we're actually struggling as best we can. We actually have a new project. We're a nonprofit. We don't get any governmental funds. We have a new project on the books, which is really good because I was afraid we might not even have another project because we were sort of out of funds. So, and we're, you know, there's no salaried people here, so we're all volunteers. But we have the resources to get a new project going, and we do have one. And so when people actually purchase the documentary, and it's inexpensive, only $12 for renting or $15 for buying online as a Vimeo on a video on demand, or buying the DVD, they are contributing to a very small group that is helping to change this planet more crucially with greater leverage than any group that I know of on the planet Earth, because this type of stuff isn't found anywhere else, and there's nobody else duplicating what we're doing. And so it's a little bit of cash goes a long way. What we're trying to do right now is to get to a point where we have a video building, a video studio building, so that we can actually do these things better. That requires some money that we simply don't have, but we're hoping to be able to get that in the near future, and then establish a studio where we can have like full green screen capabilities and so on. We have the cameras, we just don't have the tools to use them in. So anyway, but we nonetheless are doing remarkably well considering what we do have. I had an interview recently with somebody who works for the BBC, and it was very interesting for that person, who is always surrounded by the very best video quality, to say that the production quality of the Great Pyramid of Giza was absolutely first rate. He was astounded that we actually did something that was that good, like television movie quality. So we've learned how to do it, all as volunteers. And what we're doing now is not only top of the game in terms of the remote viewing itself, but our ability to present it is at the top of its game as well. So this is the time for us to move this planet, if there ever is going to be one.
This was one of the aims and hopes that you really had for the new Pyramid documentary, was that not only to put that fascinating information in the public domain, but to basically raise the bar with remote viewing sort of globally, because this is not something that's going to be lost, because it's something that we can all do.
There's a risk, Greg. For example, Dick Allgaier, to my knowledge, is the only one willing to teach the HRVG methodology. That's a Hawaii Remote Viewers Guild methodology to large numbers. And if he retires, and he is getting older, and there were some, you know, issues with regard to the concussion in terms of, stress-related stuff, is if he retires and it goes, it's over, meaning nobody will be able to resurrect the HRVG methodology. It's gone. Archaeologists won't be able to dig it up. I mean, it's over. The CRV methodology will probably not die out, and that's what Daz Smith uses. That's controlled remote viewing. It's a methodology that came out of the Defense Intelligence Agency. But the HRVG methodology came out of Special Forces. It was taught to him by Glenn Wheaton, who came out of Special Forces Intelligence. And that was not an official program in the military, but rather an unofficial movement in the military that later became known as the 1st Earth Battalion, and was featured prominently in the movie, not the book, named Men Who Stare at Goats. And so that was starring Jeff Bridges and George Clooney. So that methodology will simply be gone. So there is a risk of it going away.
Well, what I was thinking of is that this is an inherent human ability. In that sense, it wouldn't be lost, but it would be a shame to have to rediscover it. I mean, this is not something I've actually heard you say before, but I mean, if there are people listening to this, if they've got any sense that they have any kind of extrasensory perception of any kind, if they're interested in remote viewing, then they should be in contact with you.
Yeah, minimally to watch the results that we have, because that gives us a little bit of resources, but it also gives them the very knowledge that they need. But secondly, the type of resources that we need, for example, Dick does not have the ability to video record the entire instructional set for the HRVG methodology. We need to do that for him. It just can't be done by Dick. So we need to bring him in here to a video studio, our own video studio, and record it for him over a period of a couple months. And, you know, you're talking a couple $100,000 to be able to set that up and do that. And he can't stay in a car, so he's got to stay in a room. It's you know, someplace in the studio for a couple months while we do all that. Now, if you think of a couple $100,000, that's, to people who have real money, that's really petty change. For example, George Lucas, I'm a huge fan of George Lucas and his wife, Melody Hobson. He just sold his entire Lucasfilm thing that did all the Star Wars stuff and the Indiana Jones stuff. He sold that all to Disney for $4 billion. And he took the entire $4 billion and gave it away for educational purposes, because he doesn't need it. He's got so many billions. Well, you know, for him, a couple $100,000 is a round off of his kitchen budget. I mean, that is nothing. But so for people who have real money, a few $100,000 is very insignificant. But on the other hand, it would more fundamentally change this planet than billions of dollars thrown into an educational system that's already a wreck. And it's going to be a wreck after $4 billion as well. I mean, it's just, you're not going to change the planet by throwing $4 billion into the educational system. It's just not going to be, there'll be some marginal improvement in some areas. And then right after the money is spent, it'll sink back to where it was. On the other hand, just a few $100,000 for us gives us an outreach capability to describe to people what we do in a way that would fundamentally change the entire planet. So you get much more out of a couple $100,000 than you get out of even, say, $4 billion.
Well, just returning to today, just remind listeners, we've been discussing your new Giza Pyramid Mystery Solved documentary. There'd be a number of people, I mean, I don't see mainstream Egyptology accepting any of this at all, that they don't, you know, even stuff that's right in front of their noses, they have a hard time with. But I suppose there'll be a number of people who'll be a bit crestfallen to think that the Great Pyramid, or indeed any of the other similar structures around the world, could actually be more or less pointless or a distraction. Yeah. What sort of reaction have you had so far to the documentary?
So far, everything's been extraordinarily positive, but we're not getting feedback from mainstream archaeologists. They're still stuck in the mud. You have to understand that remote viewing is not, despite the fact that it's overwhelmingly been demonstrated to be real for a number of decades now, the remote viewing phenomenon is not taught in any university in the world. And I'm not talking about just the procedures, but just the subject itself, the history and things like it, just simply not taught in the universities. It's a forbidden topic. And that is similarly true of extraterrestrials. So you can have extraterrestrials flying ships over Phoenix, for example, the Phoenix Lights, the famous Phoenix Lights. And they flew in formation over five states, witnessed by hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps a couple million. I mean, it was a huge number of people. And then when they got to Phoenix, they hovered over in formation, stayed there for like an hour, hour and a half. And this was witnessed by Fief Symington, the governor of Arizona, as well. And some of them came really low so that they blocked out all the stars and you could see the underbelly of the ships. I mean, it was really clear. And mainstream news didn't report any of it. And it was just internet chatter that was sort of running amok. And then 6 months later, the Air Force had a pilot, a lieutenant, come out who gave a brief talk about the Phoenix Lights and said, oh, we thought we'd just explain that. That was a bunch of flares. We were doing some operations. That was a very brief presentation, and he just said, that was a bunch of flares, and we did it. And then he went away. That was reported everywhere. All the major news people reported that and said answer is now solved. The problem's now solved. Now, they didn't report the problem in the first place. They didn't report the original one, but they reported the fact that it had been solved. But that the answer was so stupid, like flares don't fly in formation over five states and they come down. They don't hang overhead for an hour and a half. And then they're not so big that they look like the underbelly of big ships that block out all the stars. I mean, I mean, it just gets so ludicrous. But the mainstream reported it anyway, very dutifully. So what we have now is something very similar with the remote viewing phenomenon, that the mainstream has these preposterous ideas that they're doing, or they simply ignore the problem entirely. For example, Michael Cremo wrote a book called Forbidden Archaeology, a really fat book, really interesting and extensively documented. It was really a great book, tremendous resource. Of all the of a great many zillions of archaeological finds that clearly go against what mainstream science says as human civilization being a very recent phenomenon. And all those things are forbidden to be taught in major universities. And he just went through and documented everything that's not allowed to be taught, and the people who have been fired for trying to bring up these subjects. And but, you know, you can make any theory work that you want if you only look at the data that fit the theory. You cannot only look at the data that fit your theory. You have to look at all the data. And, for example, I could make a theory that gravity only works going upwards by only looking at things that go up. For example, every time someone hits a baseball and it flies up in the air, I could only look at the ball going up. I never look at it going down. So I'd have a theory that would be 100% proven accurate, because all my data would be correct, that whenever you looked at anything flying, it was only going up. But is that a crazy idea or what? I mean, you have to look at all the data. You have to look at when the ball comes back down. So, you know, if you want to say anything at all, you can get away with it if you only look at data that sort of fit the theory and don't look at all the data. And that's what we have at the university level. They have theories about physics that are totally bonkers on the quantum mechanical as well as the macro level, because they refuse to look at data that contradict those things. And they're adamant about it. So right now, I am the only scholar. I can say I'm the leading scholar. I don't do this at the university. I'm a mathematician that teaches in a social science program at Emory University, which is a very mainstream university. So I do not do any remote viewing research there. But nonetheless, I am a tenured academic, and I am the only tenured academic anywhere that studies the remote viewing phenomenon as it is done using these military or military-derived methodologies. That says something enormous, because after two decades, I'm still the only one. I mean, that's really says something. So what we really have is a situation in which people have to circumvent the authorities and the educational systems, because they're going to be the last ones to change. They have to look directly at the evidence themselves and fundamentally realize that the educational systems are very dysfunctional. For example, in physics, may sound crazy to you when you actually think about it, but the basic paradigms that are taught in physics are quantum mechanical and relativistic physics. Those things are 100 years old, meaning there have been improvements in the details, but there have been absolutely no fundamental changes in the basic paradigms for 100 years. We're still dealing with the same stuff that they were talking about at the turn of the century with regard to quantum mechanics, the same theories. We're talking about the same ideas that Einstein came up with regard to the special and general relativity theories. Nothing has changed in terms of the fundamental paradigms. Absolutely nothing. That alone tells you it's crazy, because science should be progressing and there should be new stuff. And so the only reason they can still support those crazy ideas is because they refuse to look at data that contradict those ideas. As soon as you look at data that contradict those ideas, you have to realize that, hey, those things are correct within a certain subset of reality, but they certainly don't define the bottom line of reality. And you're not getting any of that at the university level.
Among the community who accept remote viewing, even if they don't fully understand it, have you had any feedback since the documentary came out regarding your actual findings on the Great Pyramid?
Everybody's been very positive. I haven't heard any, for anyone who's seen the documentary, the quality of the comments are always that the quality of the documentary itself is first rate, and that the content of the documentary is jaw-dropping, is absolutely astounding. And it's extremely convincing, because when people actually look at it, you know, in the past, when you had to sort of convince people that these doodles and paper and pen type scans were closely related to the target, that was one thing. But when you see the people like Des Smith and Dick Allgaier right in front of the camera, by the way, there was no cameraman. They had to buy their own cameras and they set up their own cameras. They were alone recording it. There was no one in the room to lead them. And when you see them actually describing these targets, these places, the construction, the mining, the manipulation of the blocks, the building of the pyramids, when you see that, and the descriptions are as good, this is not an exaggeration, they're as good as if Dick and Daz went back in time and witnessed it with their own eyes and then came back to tell us about it. And, you know, Daz Smith is a graphic artist, so he is a great drawer. I mean, he can really draw things well. So he really, those stone blocks really look like three-dimensional stone blocks, and he calls them. They're made of stone, large stone blocks. He describes it exactly. And Dick Alkire is also an extremely good drawer. So this is extraordinarily convincing. So absolutely 100% of the comments, I've not had a single comment from anybody that had questions about the content or the actually even the quality of the video once they've seen it. We are really at, Greg, I'm not kidding. This took 20 years to get to where we are now. We don't have any employees. We had to learn how to do everything ourselves. We're at the absolute top of our game. So if we're going to be succeeding in changing this planet in a fundamental and interesting, positive way, it's got to be now, because this is, you know, we have a clear time limit. We have financial issues with respect to Daz. We have age and post-concussion issues with respect to Dick. Dick has recovered from the concussion, but still, you know, it knocked the wind out of him. And I don't know how much longer he'll be, you know, keeping on going on doing this. It's a lot of work. So now is the time for us to do this. And this is the moment. And if we don't finish this, it'll have to be started all over again. You're talking about at least another 20, 25 years, and you'll be at the exact same situation that we are in now. It won't be any better. So now is the time to do this.
Okay, well, Courtney, well, as we begin to wind things up for today, just remind folks about your website, of course, so there they can find all the links to the documentary.
Yeah, great. There's actually a couple things. First, you go to the website for the Farsight Institute. That's www.farsight.org. And the main thing is what I'd like you to see is that right on the homepage is a free 40-minute video that right at the top. There's a free 40-minute video that describes, it's the announcement video, that describes the overall project, and it has 25 minutes of the actual full documentary. So that's the first thing people should do. Second thing is, and maybe actually this is the first thing, we are a nonprofit. We have absolutely no funds whatsoever to advertise. So we don't have any way to tell people about our work unless they sign up for our free newsletter. So at the bottom of our nav bar on the left, you'll see a blue banner. It says subscribe to our free newsletter. If you could just click on that and put in your email address, we'll be able to email you and tell you when our next project comes out and updates on what we're doing. It's something that we send out for free and comes out once a week, usually on Fridays. And we never give the email addresses out to anybody, so there's no reason not to. Just do that. And then once you finish the 40-minute documentary, the 40-minute actually announcement video, if you can, it's really important to actually see with your own eyes the full documentary, and it will be an enjoyable experience.
Wonderful. Well, Courtney, thank you so much for joining us once again on LegalizeFreedom.com.
Well, I want to thank you so much for inviting me. It's really great, Greg. It's an honor to be here. You're a great interviewer, a great host, and it's a privilege for me to be able to interact with you.
Well, folks, that's it for another week. As ever, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy the show, please check out the website. That's legalizefreedom.com, legalize-freedom.com, where you'll find an archive of programs offering alternative views on a wide range of topics, including world affairs, politics and economics, science and technology, religion and spirituality, conspiracy, and alternative history. You can also browse and buy a range of books and DVDs from our guests, and if you're feeling generous, make a donation to help keep the site up and running. Until next time, I'm Greg Moffat, and you've been listening to LegalizeFreedom.com.